Today we're going to be talking about pitching mechanics for pitchers with an arm slot of 3/4 or higher. The purpose of good mechanics is fivefold. Number one, good mechanics are allow you to stay healthy as a pitcher. Pitching is a high injury pursuit. Anatomically, our arms work in a low fashion because that's the way we're anatomically attached to our shoulders. When we start raising our elbow and our arm above our shoulders, the incidence of injury is greater. However, with good mechanics, you reduce that injury factor. One thing that you need to understand when you look at the big leagues, 40% of all the people that go on the disabled list are pitchers. So the people with bad mechanics or overuse, they're going to have some arm problems just naturally as a result of the stresses that are inherent in pitching. Second thing that we find with good mechanics, that you can repeat your delivery. You can repeat the release point, the arm slot, the leverage points, which are going to give you the best chance to hit your target consistently. The third thing that good mechanics are going to provide for you is your ability to maximize your velocity. Not only the velocity of your fastball, but the velocity of your breaking pitches and the quality and command of all your pitches. Good mechanics doesn't necessarily guarantee you X miles an hour. All it does, it guarantees you the ability to reach your maximum efficient velocity range. The third thing that good mechanics does, it allows you to hit your target more consistently because of that consistent factor of release and arm slot and sameness of delivery. The quality of your pitches in the game are going to be more consistent. There's not going to be a great variation between your best pitch and your worst pitch. Many times you'll see, in terms of velocity, a pitcher that'll range anywhere from 80 to 88 miles an hour with his fastball as a result of inconsistent mechanics. We feel that if there's a variation of more than 3 or 4 miles an hour, unless it's by design, that there's a problem with consistency as far as mechanics are concerned. Another thing that good mechanics are going to do, it's going to allow you to be able to hold your stuff longer. You're going to be able to pitch later in the game. You're not going to have to, as a coach, you will not have to go to your secondary line of pitching as often because that person is going to be able to maintain his stuff because he's not going to have to muscle his pitches through the strike zone and fatigue himself. So those are the basic factors the importance of mechanics and consistent mechanics in pitching. The next factor that we need to understand, and in my introduction I talked about pitching from a 3/4 to above arm angle, we feel that it's imperative to have a downhill plane to the plate, that's the best position to get hitters out because it provides depth to your pitches. It provides a very critical angle of the ball coming to the plate. As far as the hitter is concerned, he has to be more precise in his approach to contact. When the ball is coming from a downhill plane, when it's coming on a downhill angle, anywhere from 7 to 13 degrees downhill plane, and the variation is dependent upon the height above the shoulder the ball is released, the height of the pitcher, and the height of the mound, and also the position of the ball in the strike zone. When it's coming on that critical angle, it's only in the strike zone for a very short period of time. When your arm goes down below 3/4 and flattens out, the ball stays on the club head longer, and there's less deception in terms of downhill plane. I think one thing that substantiates this downhill technique is that in 1978, I believe, or 1968 probably, when Bob Gibson pitched so well for the St. Louis Cardinals and Denny McLain pitched so well for the Detroit Tigers, that the rules committee in baseball, in order to provide more offense for baseball, lowered the mound. The mound used to be 15 inches high, and they lowered the mound to 10 inches. Well, the reason they did that, it cut that critical angle to the plate. It cut that downhill plane down. Now, I'm not saying that you can't be successful throwing from sidearm or even submarine, because that is a deceptive angle, but I feel like from a downhill plane, from that 3/4 arm slot or slightly above, that you create more deception, that you create a tougher angle for the hitter to hit, and that you provide more depth. You have two plane action capabilities for your fastball, your breaking ball, and your contrast pitch, your changeup, that you don't have from a low 3/4 position, and especially beneficial to the offside hitter. The low angle arm pitcher has trouble with the offside hitter. The low angle right-hander has trouble with left-handers because the breaking ball is flat and the ball stays on the bat longer with the fastball and the changeup. And same is true for a low angle left-hander to a right-hander. Now, there is some deception there, and a lot of the low angle guys can really produce some sinking action. But in general, from a high three-quarter or three-quarter position, you can attain better results to both the right and the left-hand hitter. One other thing that we're seeing to substantiate the critical importance of this downhill plane to the plate is the fact that you're seeing very few 6 foot or under pitchers being signed by professional baseball. And the people that know the most about this game are the professional people. And they have found that the taller pitchers and the pitchers that throw with more of a downhill plane as a result of their height will be more difficult to hit. They also generate probably a little bit more velocity because they've got a little stronger lever system. But we're seeing very few under 6 feet tall, especially right-hand pitchers. We'll see an occasional left-hander. But you look in the big leagues, and the average height across the board of big league pitching staffs is about 6'3". And I think that downhill plane is a big factor, because even without any movement whatsoever, that downhill plane creates a critical timing factor for the pitchers. And when pitchers are in trouble and their arm flattens out because their body's in front of their arm, pitching coaches are always working to get pitchers' arm up so that they can create better leverage but also create that downhill plane. I think the advent of the radar gun in the early 70s also showed that those pitchers that were having the greatest success were the ones that had the higher arm angles, at least the three-quarter arm angles, that created that downhill plane. They were able to generate more velocity from that angle and more bite on their breaking ball, and as a result, the downhill plane will be a critical element in the development of our mechanics that we're talking about today. I'd like to talk about the mechanics of the windup right now. There are eight basic phases of the windup, and we have a left-hand pitcher with us today. You just have to reverse everything for a right-hand pitcher. We'd like to have our left-hand pitcher on the left-hand side of the rubber because we feel that creates more deception to the hitter. For a left-hand hitter, he's almost throwing from behind that left-hand hitter, so it creates a very difficult angle to track the ball. For the right-hand hitter, by being on the left-hand side of the rubber, he hides the ball with the top part of his body longer so he doesn't see that release point. So it retards his ability to react to the pitch. Some guys that are a little bit more deceptive end up being sneaky fast because two things happen. The hitter doesn't pick up their release point as soon, and the second thing that happens, they have more extension, they release the ball a little bit closer to home plate. By being on the left-hand side of the rubber only, it provides some consistency. Pitchers that tend to move around on the rubber have no reference point, and they lose their consistent base. Now, there are exceptions. Fernando Valenzuela, who featured a screwball, pitched off the right-hand side of the rubber because that gave him 17 inches of plate to work with his screwball. There are also going to be certain right-handed sinker-slider pitchers, or left-handed sinker-slider pitchers for that matter, that will be better off working from the opposite side of the rubber away from their arm side, just because anatomically and the movement of their pitch, that it gives them more room to get the ball in the strike zone. So you have to find the spot on the rubber that's best for your particular pitcher and then keep him there so he's going to be consistent. Again, we've always talked that there are no always and nevers. However, if he can be on the left-hand side of the rubber as a left-hand pitcher, it creates a favorable angle coming at the hitter. We'd like the pitcher to take a quarter turn towards his arm side as opposed to being straight to home plate. This is a little different than the general accepted philosophy, but I believe that this gives him an easier, and you will see, it gives him an easier path to get to a balance position. He's not fighting his lower half. It's easier to make that turn and get to that balance position. Another thing we'd like to do is make sure that he's relaxed in his shoulders, that his glove is north and south. We'd like to make sure while we're talking about glove that he uses a glove with a closed web. You notice here that he's got a slot here where a lot of pitchers will extend their finger. That becomes a problem for certain pitchers because they'll have their finger extended on a fastball and hooked on a breaking ball. Matter of fact, Greg Maddux has gone to this type of glove, but he's got a little leather flap over there. That's not to protect his finger. It's to keep the hitter or the base coaches from reading his pitches as a result of what he does with the finger that's extended from the glove. You see that this glove is north and south as opposed to east and west so that the first and third base coach can't see into that glove. We want to keep that glove north and south. We'd like to have the ball up in the web of the glove. And he'll get his signal, go into the glove, and he goes into the glove much the same as a T-formation quarterback receives a snap from the center. Kind of heel of the hand to heel of the hand. The glove hand goes in there flat, and we want to make sure that we don't go in different for our breaking ball and our fastball or changeup, that we go in with the same hand position, that we go in every time and we get our grip, as opposed to going in real quick for the fastball and going in and then getting some movement out of the breaking ball. So you have to do a little self-scouting and observation so that we don't tip our pitches when we go in the glove or by showing them to the first or third base coach. That would be the first phase of our pitching delivery, and that's that starting position. The second phase of the pitching delivery would be taking a rocker step, and the purpose of the rocker step is to unweight this pivot foot right here so that he can turn that pivot foot and start into his balance position. Now, one thing with this rocker step, and again, if we'll go back to that starting position, one thing you see out of the starting position that he's not way bent over, that he's upright, so that he's not wasting a lot of energy going from here and then coming up, which he may have to do somewhere between 100 and 125 times in a ball game. That just adds to that fatigue factor. And so he's very relaxed here, and he's taking this rocker step just to unweight this pivot foot. Now, this rocker step does nothing more than unweight the pivot foot. It's not a big step. It's a very short step. And what he needs to do is maintain his head position over the rubber and his shoulders over the rubber. The rocker step is merely to unweight this pivot foot. Now, when he's angled toward the foul line, this rocker step is going to be at, for a left-hander, is going to be at 4 o'clock. And for a right-hander, it's going to be at 8 o'clock. And all this does is allows him to take weight off this pivot foot so that he can pivot it parallel to the rubber and reach his balance position. Now, one thing that we like to do, let's come back to that starting position. When we take that rocker step, we like to bring our hands up over our head. And the one thing that we find that when we bring our hands up over our head when we take that rocker step is that it helps us synchronize the top half of the body and the bottom half of the body. Now, as a result of Don Larsen's perfect game in the World Series, before that time, everybody brought their hands up over their head. And when he had such great success, now we've got a lot of no wind-up pitchers or modified no wind-up pitchers, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. As long as they're relaxing their shoulders and they have that synchronization of separation between hands and leg lift that you'll see as we get into the third phase of the delivery. But on this rocker step, we like that hands coming up over our head with the rocker step. We feel like it puts those arms on stretch, which gives us a chance to have maximum contraction when we throw. We feel it also is a good rhythm and timing technique. And also, it relaxes the arms and shoulders because it puts them on stretch. And as I'm taking this rocker step, I'm bringing that hand back over my head. How far back is very individual. Some pitchers will come all the way back. Some will come just up over their head. What you need to be careful of is that when you come back in here, that we don't show the grip to the hitter, that we keep that glove closed. It's almost like I'm holding my pitching hand with my thumb and little finger of my glove hand. So as I bring this back, I unweight, and that brings us to the third phase of our delivery, which is the pivot and reaching a balance position. Now, this is not our absolute balance position. Pitching is a dynamic motion, and I think too often we get caught up in static balance and the effect it has on pitching, but we have to be able to be balanced while we're on the move. But this initial phase, we're going to bring us to kind of a static position, so we take that rocker step, and third phase, we're going to pivot, and he's pivoting to where his pivot foot is parallel to the rubber. Some pitchers will not turn it quite as much. They'll leave a spike on top of the rubber so that they can get a little leverage to push off. I think that, for me, it It produces more of a rushing effect to the plate where they lose their balance and they start to tilt to the plate too fast. And I'd much prefer that that foot is parallel to the rubber. And now we're reaching our balance position. So when this is happening, this stride leg is coming up and we're lifting with the quad of our stride leg. As that stride leg is coming up, these hands are separating vertically down the body. So it's kind of a lift and separate action where the leg is lifting and the hands are coming down and they're starting to separate. This lift is with the quad. We're not lifting with the lower leg, which has a tendency to put our weight back on our heels, and we're staying tall because we want to create that downhill plane. There's going to be a little bit of flex here, but we're coming up and we're balanced with the button of our hat, balanced over the ball of our pivot foot. Now, as this leg is coming back, it's coming back slightly towards the throwing arm shoulder when we're lifting to get to this initial balance position. And you see the toe is down. Now, more overhand pitchers may be a little bit more straightened with this leg, not quite as bent, but you want to make sure that they don't straighten it so much that it puts them back on their heels and they end up arcing their back in here and they end up getting circular too soon. What we're looking for here is we want to be linear to the plate. We don't want to get into rotation too soon. When we do that, we end up flattening out our arm, but we also end up pushing our release point farther away from the hitter. We'd like to get our release point as close to the hitter as we can, because then we will maintain our velocity and it creates some deception because the ball will get on the hitter faster because that release point is out in front. But also, the farther back your release point is, the more resistance to the ball by the atmosphere, it's going to slow the ball down. You'll see a lot of pitchers on the radar gun that out of their hand will be 88, then at the plate they'll be 81 or 82. The guys that have the release point a little bit farther lose less as the ball's coming to the plate. Okay, so we're reaching this balance position with that rocker step, hands up, but it doesn't have to be hands up as long as we have that separation as this leg is lifting. Now, as you notice here, that toe is down, this knee is coming back towards the shoulder just to close off that hip a little bit so we don't end up flying open with this front side, because this has got to lead us to the plate. Now, the actual balance position, which is the fourth phase of our delivery, is as my hands are separating and I'm taking the ball down out of the glove, okay, as I'm separating, I stay over the rubber. What a lot of young pitchers tend to do in this balance, the actual balance phase, they start to glide to the plate as they're separating or just before, and then their arm is late, so the only thing they can do is muscle this thing through. They throw their head out and their arm goes flat. They use a lot of the anterior deltoid here to get their arm through. Now, what happens here, this is really tough on the arm. It's a high injury release. Also, it's a high fatigue release. You'll see these types of pitchers that they'll start off with a decent velocity in the first inning, and by the second or third inning, their velocity is way down because they're having to work so hard to throw. We want to throw with effortless effort. So let's come back up into this balance position again. And we're taking this separation, we're taking the ball down out of the glove, and you notice that as our pitcher here is separating, that he's separating, his thumbs are pointed down. When his thumbs are pointed down, this elbow is up. Now, it's kind of a tilt to the plate, and you're going to see where we feel like this tilt action here with the thumb, what that occurs when the thumbs go down on separation, is going to allow him to cartwheel to the plate and get his energy going toward the plate without spinning off or flying open early. It's going to keep his alignment to the plate. Again, we want to be linear and we want late, powerful rotation. We don't want that rotation to come early. And when this glove stays here and this elbow stays there, now that keeps that alignment. You notice as he's separating that his fingers are on top of the ball. Now, let's come back again and let's just look at this separation, because that's the next phase of our delivery here. And this fifth phase would be separation and glide to the plate. Now, his hand does not have to come down in here. As a matter of fact, we talk about thumb to thigh and hand to sky on separation so we get up into a power position. There are some pitchers that are going to be longer takeaway guys. There are others that are going to be a little bit flatter takeaway guys. Later in their careers, and especially we're seeing it with Roger Clemens right now, he used to be much longer takeaway. Now he takes away real flat and he gets his arm up early. You never can get your arm up too early. If your arm's up late, you're always going to have problems. If you're up here early with a little flatter takeaway, I think that's to your advantage. And again, that takeaway is a vertical separation down the body. We're not taking the glove back this way, because then that closes us off a little bit and we end up spinning out when we open up. So we want that glove right down the middle of the body. The ball's coming out of the glove and the separation is starting as that leg is lifting. Here's the separation. It's coming out somewhere around the sternum, between the sternum and the belt, and it's coming out thumb to thigh, hand to the sky. Now, it can come out a little bit flatter. It can come out above the thigh or it come out below the thigh and long. But we want to make sure that when it does come out, it comes out with alignment. A lot of young pitchers, when they take the ball out of the glove, especially if they push this glove back, they end up wrapping. Let's turn sideways here, you can see this. They end up taking their arm back in here, and now it's got a long way to go to the release point, and they're going to be late with their arm. And this also puts a lot of stress on the arm. We want to take that thing out, thumb to thigh and hand to the sky, and you notice we have our fingers between the hitter and the ball. This is our power position. This is where we want to be once we glide to the plate and our foot lands. All right, let's come back in, and again, we're in this power position. We're in this balance position where we're separating, and this thumbs are down, and we're reaching thumb to thigh and hand to the sky. Now we're ready in our fifth stage to glide to the plate. The first thing that happens before we glide to the plate is this leg goes from flexed, and again, how flexed depends on the individual. Some pitchers will bring their knee way up. Nolan Ryan brought his leg way up to his chest, but he counterbalanced it by dipping his head a little bit to keep his weight out over here. Yet other guys don't bring it up as high. But one thing that is beneficial, we feel, that helps you accelerate to the plate, we feel like two things are linear accelerators. One is this lead arm, and the other is this leg. When this leg comes up, and now I'm starting to separate. Once I start that separation, now I'm ready to glide to the plate. Before I start to glide, this leg goes down, it straightens, and now I start my glide to the plate. As I'm gliding to the plate, this arm is coming up, okay? And this is not an absolute position. Again, we're not talking about that you've got to do this. Again, there's a lot of variation. Some pitchers will not have their glove as high. Some pitchers will be tucked a little bit more here. Some will have a little less tilt. Some will just kind of turn their glove over and fold it into their side. Some will be more aggressive with their lead arm. Others will just have it up there and they kind of bring their chest to their lead arm. Some guys will pull a little bit more. We feel like with the glove up in this position here that it creates some deception because the ball is behind the glove. Two, we feel like when I glide from this position here, that I'm more linear to the plate, that it keeps my alignment. So I want all my energy going to the plate. I don't want to waste any energy going right or left. And now from this power position here, where I'm tall on my backside here, my elbow is at or slightly above shoulder height. I'm not down in here where I'm pushing the ball. Okay, I'm up in here in a powerful position here with this glove up, even though there's a lot of variation and individuality as far as what happens with this lead arm. But we feel that from, let's come back to our balance position, from here, that when we extend this leg and we start to glide, drop it down, okay, and glide, and we keep this front hip there, and now we plant, and again, when we plant, we want this foot slightly closed to keep everything in. And we want this front hip going at the hitter. We want alignment here. This toe is slightly closed. This leg is slightly bent. A lot of young pitchers end up very flexed on this leg like this. They lower their release point. They get underneath the ball. They lose that downhill plane. We want to stay tall on this front side. We're basically standing tall and falling to the plate. It's not a drop and drive action. We feel like it's more efficient if you stay tall, you can maintain your stuff longer, and you create that critical angle to the plate. But also, from up in here, by staying a little bit closed here, I have leverage when I start my pitch. My pitch starts when this foot hits the ground. That's when my pitch starts. And we likened it to a door. The hinges of the door are on the front side. I'm locked into the door jamb here, and I'm closing the door from the back side here. The hinges are not back in here where I'm swinging open this way. That's why it's important to look at this arm angle, and this angle here should approximate this angle here. Okay? The more 3/4, the more this glove should work in a vertical fashion here. When this lead arm goes flat, then that drops this arm down in here, and again we become horizontal and everything flattens out. So now I'm up in here, and this would be my power position right here. And it's very important that this leg right here, your stride leg, stops your lower half momentum, because we want to transfer all the energy from my bottom half up into my top half. It's very similar to a pole vaulter who runs down a runway at high speed, sticks the pole in the box, that stops his forward energy, translates all the energy to the pole and pops him over the bar. Another analogy is a car with the driver with the seat belt just on his lower half, doesn't have the shoulder harness on, comes up to a stop sign, slams the brakes on, what happens? He snaps forward. That's how we generate hand and arm speed, by translating, stopping our lower body momentum going to the plate and transferring all this energy to the upper half. Now, we don't want to be so stiff here that we stop ourselves and we re-throw and recoil as a result of being so stiff here. There has to be some flex in there, but we want it somewhere between 120 and 140 degrees, and again, everything's individual. We're looking for outcome. This may not work for your guy. You have to figure out what's best for your guy. All right, the seventh phase of our delivery is the pitch. And the pitch is initiated by rolling the laces of the pivot foot. You notice right here, this pivot foot is rolling right there, okay? And at the point of release, if everything is in sync, I'm not rushed and I'm not muscling the ball, this head is level to the ground, my eyes are level, this glove is up, or it could be pulled down and in a little bit, or the chest is going to come to the glove. The ball leaves my hand somewhere, even with my eyes or my ear. This arm is straight, okay? The fingers on the fastball are behind the ball, you know, breaking ball. They're going to be more to the front of the ball, change up back inside. When we talk about specific pitches, we'll talk about release points. But this is your basic release from right here. This stride length is going to be dependent upon the individual pitcher. Nolan Ryan took a humongous stride. That worked for him. He took maybe 7'7" stride. And in general, somewhere between 80% of your body height and your body height would be an optimal stride. It's all individual. One thing that you need to realize, there are two factors here. When you overstride, you end up losing that downhill plane because you're not throwing from as tall a position, number one. But when you understride, that will move your release point farther away from home plate and cut your stuff down there, your velocity, etc., etc. And so this is open to individual preference. We'd like to have our stride long enough where we can get our release point as close to home plate as we can, but not so long that it destroys the downhill plane to the plate. Remember, the pitcher's mission is to hit his target with the best possible downhill mechanics and the best possible stuff that he can. And that breaks the pitching down to a very simple thing. You know, job description, hit your target with your maximum mechanics. Now we're coming back to the point of release. And what we want to do is make sure that we really accelerate our hand from release all the way through into your follow-through. And what we really emphasize with our pitchers is finish every pitch aggressively. Finish every pitch hard. And one thing that precludes a pitcher from doing is stopping his arm as he's releasing it, cutting it off as he releases it, or not extending through the pitch. What we're looking for is hand first, head second, then chest over knee. We're finishing this pitch with our throwing arm shoulder across our stride, leg, knee. The side of our throwing side finishes longer than the side of our glove hand side. We talk about finishing with a long side, but we want to finish this thing very aggressively. Go ahead and roll those laces and go aggressively. We want hand speed all the way down through our delivery. Now, when I finish this delivery, one of the things that this does, it allows me to decelerate my arm and take pressure off the cuff. The main purpose of the follow-through is one of deceleration. And the pitchers that have a tendency to cut it off and finish in here, they don't have that deceleration and they put a lot of pressure on that rotator cuff. The pitchers that end up cutting it off and not extending do the same thing. We want full extension, head following, finishing with that long side position. Now from here, whatever happens with your backside happens. In general, what happens? This foot is up and it's kind of in a V position here. If as a result of your delivery, you end up falling off to the right hand side, all this guy's going to do is take a crow hop to get back square in a fielding position. But with the key factor here, and when we come back up here, is that we're aggressive through our release point, that we trust our arm and hand speed. The pitchers that tend to cut the pitch off, one of two things is wrong. They've got an injury, or they just don't trust their hand speed, and they don't trust their stuff, and they're more into outcome, and I've got to throw this pitch. They get into kind of prayer pitching. They hope they throw this pitch, and they don't end up trusting it and letting it fly. And what we're trying to do is throw the ball through the target with trust and confidence and finish that pitch off aggressively and roll those laces, and then this heel is going to come up in the air. Everybody's a little bit different, and then they'll finish the pitch. If they end up off to the side, they'll take a little crow hop to rectify themselves to get square into a fielding position. When I finish my pitch, one thing that young people have a tendency to do, we talk about rolling the laces. They say, well, if rolling the laces is good, then this must be better. They'll roll this heel out. And what that does, it forces them into rotation too soon, and it does just the opposite of what we want them to do. It tilts their head and it gets them going away from their target. They're losing energy toward their glove hand side. They end up going horizontal. So we just merely roll those laces and take that hand to the plate, throw it through the target, head follows, and then chest out over that knee, and throw an arm shoulder across the stride, leg, knee. Let me review the mechanics of the delivery, the eight phases that we talked about. One would be the starting position. Two would be the rocker step. Three would be the pivot and reaching a balance position. Four would be the actual balance position. Five would be the separation and tilt. Six would be the glide and stride to home plate. Seven would be the actual pitch, and eight would be the finish or the follow-through. Now we'd like to talk about pitching out of the stretch, and we'll take a left-hander first since we have a left-hander here, and then I'll step up there and talk about a right-hander's delivery of the plate. One thing that we'd like to do is make sure that our stretch delivery in terms of efficiency, and when we talk about efficiency, we're talking about our maximum working velocity and command is the same out of the windup and the stretch. And you have to evaluate it. You have to look at strike ball percentage, windup and stretch, and you have to look at velocities, windup and stretch. I feel like anything more than 2 miles an hour difference between the windup and the stretch means that there's a problem with the stretch delivery. It's a lot easier for a left-hand pitcher to sync up his windup and stretch and keep them more alike because he is looking at the runner at first base and being quick to the plate is not a factor. But We even with a left-hander, we have what we call a sixth cleat move to the plate, which we use as a change of pace to the hitter, as a change of pace to the runner, or in a hit-and-run situation, or in a situation where we can't stop this base runner at first base and we need to quicken our delivery. But our basic delivery to the plate, we start with the head at a 45-degree angle where we're looking somewhere in between first base and home plate. And as we are lifting the leg, we are slightly lifting the hands, or we're separating the hands immediately. It's the same type of situation. And now from here, we're in the same balance position as we were when we're going to the plate. What a lot of left-handers have a tendency to do out of the stretch, and we're not talking about the move aspect to first base. We just want to make sure that the head position is consistent with the pitch to the plate and the pick to first base. What a lot of young pitchers have a tendency to do is they'll move their head back and forth, and they end up looking at home plate and throwing to first, and then looking at first base and throwing to home plate. I feel it's probably easiest if we just look in between and then predetermine or react to the runner's movement that we sense out of the stretch delivery. So basically, we're coming into a balanced position without making any pivot out of the stretch position here, and we want to make sure that when this leg lifts that we don't get too much lift in here, so that now that legs and hands go at the same time. We want to make sure that this separation, just like out of the windup, starts before we glide to the plate. That would be a key factor. And now I'm ready to glide to the plate in the same basic mechanics, and this front side stays closed and so on and so forth. You see here that we have a little stagger out of our feet so that we can bring this knee up to our throwing arm shoulder. We want to make sure that we don't cross the rubber. When you do cross the rubber with your foot, that obligates you to either pick to second base or to throw to the plate. We want to come basically straight up even with the rubber, and that knee going at that throwing arm shoulder. Now I'm starting my separation before I start my glide to the plate. The second option for the left-hander is what we call a sixth cleat action, and it's a quick move to the plate. And this is basically the same move that I'm going to show you for a right-hander. And what he is going to do here is going to take a short lift with his knee, and he's going to bring it to his back knee, and he's going to show the six cleats of his spike to the hitter. And then as he's picking this knee up, he's making that separation. Go ahead, and he's gliding to the plate. Go. Okay, so we're in our power position. It's important that we separate as soon as that knee action starts, that we get that separation so I don't end up in this position here, all spread out and in a non-leverage position where I'm going to have to spin out and keep everything flat. What this six cleat action will allow you to do is change the pace on a base runner. Also, it's a little quicker action to the hitter, so sometimes the hitters get geared up to getting their rhythm to the left-handed pitcher lifting his leg, and now we mix in this go ahead all the way through it with this six cleat action, and they're not ready to hit, so the ball gets on them a little bit faster. We can also use this with a runner on second base for the same reason. Also, for the lefties that are a little bit slow with a runner on second, and they become vulnerable to the steal of third base, they can mix in this six cleat action. One thing that you have to make sure of is that we're not giving up efficiency to the plate. And when we talk about efficiency, we're talking about ability to hit your target and ability to have your maximum movement and stuff to the plate by trying to be too tricky and trying to do too much. And again, like everything else, more is less. So you have to make sure that this is efficient and effective, because it doesn't matter if you hold this guy on. If you're not efficient to the plate, it doesn't matter, because you're going to end up backing up third base or home plate because of the low quality pitch that you throw to the plate. One thing that I neglected to mention with the left-handers, when we're reaching our stretch position, we'd like to start with the ball in our hand. Especially good for left-handers, and I'll do it right-handed because it allows them to make that quick step-off move when they look over and that guy's got a long extended primary lead with that short, quick step-off. Another reason is, in a first and third situation, the ball's right in your hand. You don't have to fumble to reach for it in the glove and maybe drop it and possibly balk. There's a negative for having the ball in the hand, however. A lot of times guys will give pitches away. They'll bring their curveball up here, and they'll bring their fastball up here, and they'll bring their changeup up in a particular way. It's very important that you self-scout, and that we ask our guys to just palm the ball in their hand and bring it up the same way, then go in the glove and turn the ball in the glove to get their pitch. Now, out of the stretch position for the right-hander, we want to make sure that that glove is up and in and not turned sideways. When your glove is turned sideways and there's a runner on second base, they can see your grip. So we want to keep this glove, again, in a somewhat north and south fashion with a runner on second base, and even with a runner on first, we want to keep everything pretty consistent. Some people believe that in a running situation you have one delivery to the plate. In a non-running situation, you can do something differently. I like to believe that we could have one efficient stretch delivery rather than having a wind-up delivery, a stretch delivery when they may run, and a stretch delivery when they're not running. So we'd like to have one efficient stretch delivery that works in a running and non-running situation. Again, as a right-hander, where I'm not facing the runner at first base, where it should be easier for me to hold that guy on and where time is not a factor, I need to be somewhat quick to the plate. And the bottom line, the priority is to be efficient first, to have good stuff and good location. But I'd like to be with my fastball in the 1-2 range, 1.2 seconds. That's from my first move until the time the ball gets to the catcher. And with my breaking ball or changeup in the 1-3 range, that gives my catcher a chance to throw people out. Now, if I can't be efficient to the plate and do that, then I have to be more deceptive with my move. I have to change the tempo of my delivery, hold the ball longer, quick set and go, vary the picks at first base, use my step-off move. These are techniques for another video, a pitcher's fielding video. But the most important thing is to be effective to the plate. However, I do believe with the move that I'm going to show you right now that I can be efficient and effective and also be quick to the plate. I don't believe in this slide step where I jump off my back foot and just slide to the plate. I feel it leads to arm injuries. I feel it leads to rushing the body ahead of the arm, that low arm angle with a lot of balls high and to the arm side, flat breaking balls and things such as that. In our six cleat move, we start with the majority of our weight on our pivot foot. We want our weight back. We want our base narrow. I want it shoulders width, maybe slightly narrower. And if I'm a closed guy, if I tend to, out of the windup, really bring this leg back and close off this front side, I may want to think about staggering these feet slightly. I don't want to stagger them too much where I end up throwing around the corner, throwing too much across my body. But a slight stagger so I can just pick that knee up, my stride leg knee to my pivot foot knee, and go six cleat to the plate. What that does, it keeps me loaded on my backside, and it allows me to get my arm up in a power position so that when this foot strikes, that I'm in a good power and leverage position. It's basically the same as my windup. Some guys may have to pick it up slightly higher than others, but I'm getting that tilt here so that I can affect that loading action on that backside and so that I can glide to the plate. Some guys will have too much weight on their front foot and then they have to come back to go forward, and that is slow and it's inefficient. And we feel that you can start with more weight on that backside with this back knee slightly bent. I don't want to be stiff back in here. It's knee to knee, six cleat and go. One thing out of the stretch that you must do is you must start that separation early. And it's separate, and then knee to knee. And the separation precedes the leg action just slightly, so you get a head start. It's kind of a cheater start here. I'm taking it out. I'm going six cleat, thumbs down, boom. Now I'm in that tilt, and I'm delivering the pitch to the plate. Now we're going to look at a series of drills to develop the basic mechanics of pitching. The first area for our drills will be the balance area. And we're going to start off with a balance beam, and we're going to walk the balance beam forward and backwards. You can do it with or without a plyo ball. We're going to show it to you with a plyo ball, and this heightens the player's awareness of his balance. We're going to start it off going forwards first, and we've just put 2 8-foot balance beams together, and he's going to walk him forward, and the coach is going to back up, or it could be another player going backwards, and we're going to go from there and walk forward and catch the ball, and he's going to concentrate on staying on that beam. Now we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to go backwards. And he is walking that beam. Got to make sure it's on solid footing there. Okay, not an easy drill. But you can see he has to focus. And again, this heightens his awareness of his balance, and it works on his dynamic balance, where he has to balance on the move, which is what pitching is about. The second one of these drills is a stride drill, and we're going to come over here, and he's going to get into his balance position in pitching, and he's going to come on the balance beam, and he's going to go from his balance position. He's going to hold that balance position. Okay, notice toe down, and he's going to go from his balance position into a stride position, and he's going to try and finish his pitch and stay balanced. Let's do that again. And again, we want to line up this this beam so that when he strides pretty much toe-to-toe or toe-to-instep. Go to your balance position, hold it, and go. And hold that balance position. Now let's go from one beam to the other beam, and we're going to tee it out here, and again, we're working this way, and out of your balance position, and he's going to line that second beam up with his stride alignment. Go. Very good. Let's do that again. And he can place that beam if he's a little bit more across his body when he strides. He can line that up, or a little bit more open. He can line that up also. Strike that balance position, separate, glide, and finish it off. Try and hold that finish position. Okay. The next part of our drill is going to be with the K-board here, and we're going to bring the K-board. And this is a kinesthetic board. It's just a 18 by 24 inch ply with a 2x4 underneath, and we're going to start it off just with a 2 foot balance situation where he's got his glove and he gets into an athletic position with his head up, and he tries to hold that balance position. The second part with the K-board, he's going to get into his balance position and hold that balance position, and then he's going to work on his separation as he's in that balance position. He's got to stay balanced. He's trying to keep his weight balanced over the ball of his pivot foot. If he gets too far forward, he's going to lose balance forward. If he gets too far back on his heel, he's going to rock back. This next balance drill is a dynamic balance and throwing drill, and it can be used with any pitch, fastball, breaking pitch, or changeup. And we strike our balance position, and what we want to make sure is that we separate before we start to glide to the plate. So I stay balanced, separate, and pitch. This allows the pitcher to not have to play catch up with his arm. His arm's going to get to a power position. He's not going to glide before he separates. It's separation and then glide to the plate. And we work out of this balance position. He gets a feel for that separation so he doesn't start to glide early. Go ahead and glide early and then separate. And then his arm ends up being horizontal, or his head flies out and he gets rotational too soon. Separation and then glide. One thing that you have to be careful with this drill is that when he makes that separation, that it's thumb to thigh, hand to the sky, and he doesn't dab his arm down and stop his arm, so that we keep it going and keep it dynamic. This next series of drills are alignment and stride drills. These are drills that get all your energy going towards your target, also give you the right alignment as far as stride is concerned, and also allow you to get a feel for the loading mechanism so that you're loading your backside up before you throw, so that you don't end up jumping out on your front side and firing your legs too soon, where you end up with your head out and your leg up over, almost like a dog over a fire hydrant. So we want to emphasize staying loaded on the back side. The first of these is a positive direction drill, and this is for the pitcher that has problems. He opens up prematurely, he gets into rotation too soon, he doesn't get his energy and his momentum directed to the plate, and this is a very simple drill. He's down on his front knee, off the rubber with his foot parallel to the rubber, pivot foot, and he's just going to rock back and step and throw. And what this does, it does not allow him to open up that front side. This is good for any thrower who has directional problems. It keeps that front shoulder going toward the plate. It's a very simple drill. It won't allow him to fly open. It'll allow him to keep his head level and get all his energy going to the plate. The second part of this drill, we call it a rock and load drill, where we just spread out in our power position. And we're just going to rock about three or four times forward and back. And then when we feel all our weight back, then we just throw and roll the laces. And again, our alignment here is our power position alignment, and we're toe to toe, toe over stride foot, toe over pivot foot, or even maybe toe to instep. And the more closed you are, the more open this foot has to be. You can't be too closed with this real closed, because then you can't clear that front side and you end up spinning out and your arm goes flat. So we've got to get proper alignment here, and we're just rocking back, loading that backside, and rolling the laces so that he gets a feel of where his weight should be before he initiates the pitch. If he ends up flying out with his head here, and then this leg flying up, like I said, up in the air, like that dog over the fire hydrant, he's firing his legs too soon. So he's just going to rock back, load the backside, and roll the laces and throw. This next series of drills are stride line drills, and they're stride correction drills that will give you the right foot plant for this any particular pitcher so that his alignment is right. We start off with we set a line all the way from the pitcher's mound to home plate, where he can look at home plate and look at his target and still see his alignment. And one thing that you're going to find is that your power pitchers are going to step a little bit farther to their arm side of center than maybe your finesse type pitchers, because that gives them a lot of torque at the end. And I'm not too concerned with guys throwing across their body, as long as they're not so far across their body that it drives their arm down, they lose that downhill plane. So he set his line up to the plate, and he puts his instep right in the middle of that line, and then he's going to step accordingly. He might step on the line. If he's more of a power pitcher, he might step more to the left of the line. If he's more of a sinker baller, he might step a little bit more to the right of the line. This can be done off the mound, but it also can be done on the field, just playing catch on the foul line. So he's working on his stride alignment. He can do it just about any time. And all these drills are real simple. They're not hard on the arm. You can work on your mechanics with these drills, just playing purposeful catch, as long as it's purposeful and you're not just flipping the ball up there. Another option for this drill, and this is one that I picked up from Bill Thurston at Amherst University, he'll just put a towel down. And he gets his alignment, and he'll just make sure that the guy does not step on the towel, where you set the towel down based on the type of stride you want for each particular pitcher. You can also use this for length of stride too. If you want to lengthen a guy out, you might move that towel out a little bit. And he knows that if he steps on that towel that he's probably opened up a little bit, or if he doesn't reach that towel that probably he needs to lengthen out his stride.